Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks for coming. In a last-minute change to the advertised lineup, you've got me, Laurie McAllister, Head of Marketing at Talon, alongside the brilliant and advertised George, Marketing Strategy Director at GiftGaff. Now, the plan for the next 20 minutes or so is for George and I to hone in on sustainability. And if you give a shit, then great. Thank you for coming and thanks for supporting. But if you're on the fence or you don't give a shit yet, then hopefully you will by the end of this presentation. But confession time. The original title for this session was a session for people who don't give a shit about sustainability. But then we all had a massive freak out that would mean no one would come because they wouldn't want to self-identify. So here we are. We also can't take full credit for the title, old or new, because it was at an Ad Net Zero event last year where the question was asked what more we can do to drive the sustainability agenda in our industry. And the answer came that to drive meaningful change, we need to engage the people that are ambivalent or even critical of the topic. And if that's you, I bet there is at least one thing you care about already. So we often fall foul of carbon tunnel syndrome when it comes to sustainability. The topic gets broached, and the first thing we're all talking about is emissions. And whilst this is one of the most serious and immediate matters that we need to address, sustainability is actually so much bigger than carbon. So ESG is a tool that lots of you might have heard of already, which is used to break down sustainability into buckets, so it's easily understandable. Originally, it was largely leveraged by the finance industry to start assessing investments. But now it's more widely adopted to define quantitative goals. And you can see on the slides, if you can see them, that within ESG, there is a huge variety of topics for us to address and for us to care about. So Talon have been on a relatively short but accelerated sustainability journey. But GiftGaff have been doing this since way before I left school and can really demonstrate that sustainability is so much more than recycling bins, keep cups and offsetting. But I do love my keep cup and I've been on a mission to get everyone at Talon to use one too. Sustainability is about community. It's about environment. It's about your impact and it's about sustainable business growth being the future. But we do have a hill to climb. If my clicker works, I'll show you the hill. So I know it's only 10 a.m. and it's the first day of Ad Week, and I just made a joke. But it is time to hear some hard truths. It's a really difficult time for sustainability. There's a considerable amount of duality. As a society, we are winning. More companies and more people doing more than ever before. But we're also losing. Emissions and inequality are rising. You might be aware of the anti-ESG movement, particularly prevalent in the US at the moment, that encompasses a diverse array of individuals, organizations, and stakeholders who criticize or reject the emphasis on ESG factors in decision-making and solely prioritize financial returns. You might have seen this Ipsos report released on Earth Day that showed that a third of Gen Z males believe that there's no point in changing my own behavior to tackle climate change because it won't make any difference anyway. And the scariest bit of this chart to me, in case you can't read that tiny writing in the bottom left, is that it shows a decline from 2021 to 2024 in people believing that we need to act now to combat climate change. You might be one of those people, or you might know someone like that, someone like this 20-year-old female who isn't sure that climate change is problematic because it's been changing for thousands of years. Now, there's two types of people that it's important for us to engage, educate, and get on the sustainability train with us. The naysayers, the criticizers, and like this girl, the ostriches with their head in the sand. And this is a no judgment zone from me, because I'll hold my hands up and I used to have my head in the sand too. We're going to come on to some scary stats in a minute. And they used to make me think that I was way too small to make a difference. But hey, look at me now. I'm on the stage. Jokes aside, if we step back and pull aside the curtain a little bit, we had a choice today. We're on stage at Adweek. I paid for the slot. We could have talked about programmatic out of home. We could have talked about creative. There are so many things at Talon that I could have had the team up here talking about. But I wanted to talk about sustainability, because I believe it needs stage time in the competitive nature of everyone talking about AI and the developments and all of that stuff. When I asked George and Sophie if they'd do the presentation, they said yes. And then we invited all of you here, and you came to listen to us talk about sustainability. And that's one small step we all took to make a difference. So no one's too small to make a difference. And we all have a role to play. And in this room, as people with influence across marketing, across advertising, and with some of us with influence over really big budgets, it's more important than ever that we play our roles. Yeah. Here's the scary stats. Because let's be really clear, we're not on track to reach global sustainability goals. Whilst this topic has gathered serious momentum since COVID, we are still way off pace. In 2015, 196 parties at the UN Climate Change Conference signed the Paris Agreement, a legally binding treaty to address climate change. Its overarching goal is to pursue efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees C above pre-industrial levels. However, 2023 was the warmest year on record since those records began in the 1800s. Even my favourite Taylor Swift had to cancel a concert in Rio due to extreme temperatures. A third of the global SDGs, that's Sustainable Development Goals, so much jargon, introduced by the UN, have seen significant stagnation or regression recently, particularly SDG 8, which is focused on promoting sustained, inclusive economic growth. It's now considered that this year we won't meet this 1.5 degree C goal, but rather pass through it entirely, which will result in more extreme impact in terms of floods, droughts, and wildfires. It's quite literally a hot topic globally. And it's a hot topic in our industry too. So like I said, in the last couple of years, sustainability has gathered significant momentum across marketing, media, and advertising. And in 2023, there were more headlines on the topic than ever before. Whilst there was a sizable focus on the environment from the usual category suspects like motors, airlines, and fossil fuels, we also started to see some brands get pulled up on their social credibility. And we were recently alerted to the term sports washing, a term used to describe the practice of nations, groups, or governments using sports to improve their tarnished reputations. And we'll all remember the backlash around the Qatar World Cup, and then the backlash on the brands who were outraged about the backlash. So we're now seeing brands, people, and countries made examples out of, and as an industry built for the purpose of effective communication. We have a really important role to play moving forwards. Whilst we aren't as far ahead as other industries, in advertising, we are considered to be architects of demand. We have the ability to create genuine change. Now, some of you may have seen this report already. It came out in 2022. So it's the Purpose Disruptors Advertising Emissions Report. And they suggested that the uplift in sales generated by the advertising industry amounted to 208 million tonnes of CO2 emissions. This makes advertising responsible for 32% of the carbon footprint of every single person in the UK. That's 32% of my carbon footprint and 32% of the carbon footprint of every single person in this room. Now, whilst sobering, that is both a huge challenge, but a massive opportunity for the advertising industry to get its act together. We're starting to see some fantastic work from brands, agencies and media owners, highlighted by the Ad Net Zero Awards. I'm sure you can all think of loads of examples, but my personal favourite was the eBay and Love Island collaboration, dressing the Islanders in pre-owned clothes. We also, of course, have GiftGaff's very own Up to Good platform, which you'll hear a little bit more about later. But we need these types of campaigns to be the rule, not the exception. So we have a really important role to play, our VIR, as I called it here on the slide. Advertising can shape people's attitudes towards a product, service, or idea. It can create positive or negative associations with a brand and shape cultural norms by portraying certain behaviours as desirable or undesirable. And no doubt none of that is new to all of you. But when we're in the day job, when we've got our head down and all we're thinking about is emails, it can be quite easy to forget. So we recently had Matt Bourne into Talon to talk about his new book about sustainable advertising. And he said that we have a real opportunity now to do something in a positive and powerful way. And I really do believe that. And I hope that when you leave this room today, you believe that too. Ad Net Zero's 5-point action plan is punctuated by action 5 to create positive behaviour change. Their ambition is that agencies and their clients should increasingly work together to use advertising to promote more sustainable choices and ultimately persuade people to adopt behaviours that reduce carbon emissions. And everyone in this room can play a part in this in some way. Because it benefits all of us. When we work together to create more sustainable solutions, it benefits everyone right across the ecosystem. It can create deeper consumer engagement. It allows wider access to capital. It can attract and motivate talent. I did that when I practiced every time, said talon instead of talent. It can attract and motivate talent within your organization, and it creates sizable market opportunities. And this is why, because now I'm going to talk about Talon. So for those of you that don't know us, Talon is an independent out-of-home agency that went from inception to global leaders in just under a decade. And throughout our growth, we've continually focused on community, on charity, and on people. And this has been one of the biggest contributing factors to our success. We're super proud to maintain that focus on community and people to today, being awarded the Sunday Times Best Place to Work over the weekend. And if you're looking for a job, got loads of roles, so have a look. We've been on a relatively short but accelerated sustainability journey, spearheaded by the brilliant Sophie Pemberton. And I'd like to think that we're now considered to be a business that are helping lead the charge and trying to help those around us too. But like I said at the beginning, GiftGaff have been doing this since I left school, which was quite a long time ago now. They demonstrate that purposeful brands incorporating non-financial metrics into a business strategy can fuel growth. And I think they're amazing. Over to you, George.
Thank you. Sadly, it probably wasn't when I left school, but never mind, we'll move on. So this morning, I wanted to give you a little bit of a snapshot around GiftGaff. So for those who don't know, GiftGaff is a mobile communications network. And I'd like to talk a little bit around our journey towards Up to Good, so the positioning that Laurie's just mentioned. But in order to do that, I'd like to kind of rewind. So if we go back those 15 years, and that puts the time on that one, doesn't it? But if we go back those 15 years to when GiftGaff was kind of first born, what I'd like to share with you is our founding principles, because actually I think they're as relevant today as they were when we first emerged as the disruptor to the UK telco market. This is a bit of a busy slide, but the ones highlighted in pink are the ones that I want to kind of go through. So I guess part of our value set was always around thinking about mutuality and fairness. So it was always with the kind of mindset that we wanted to have a mutual relationship with our members that was great value for them, but also great value for us. We really believed in the power of collective good. So you'll probably hear people talk about the GiftGaff community. So that's the group of members that have actually joined our network. And actually, these members are really, really important in everything that we do today. But at our inception, were incredibly important. So they were there kind of giving us advice around how to move the network forward. They were there answering queries because we were a startup. And so inevitably, things did go wrong. And the members were there where we couldn't be there as a small organization. So they were an incredibly important part of everything that we did. We tried to be simple. So rather than the complexities of what was the telco market, where, you know, you could have bought everything and had your phone upgraded every single year, we started really simply in the SIM space. So we decoupled that mobile phone contract and phone, and we, in doing so, really changed the mobile connectivity market. We were online only, and I think that's really important in the context of the sort of sustainability discussion we're having today. So that means that, you know, we didn't have contact centres, we didn't have a retail footprint. We were very much set up as we meant to go along, helping members online, helping them have efficient and effective digital journeys. And finally, and I think most importantly for the conversation we're having this morning, we were really responsible. So actually, we considered people and planet in everything that we did. So let's move a bit further forward to a time where I think everything changed for everyone. So I'm referencing 2020, when obviously we all had that moment where things changed. We got the opportunity to reflect and to really think about, you know, what's important to us. And actually for GiftGaff, that was a real interesting moment. So it was a moment of reimagination. Actually, the things that had set us aside in the early days had been welcomed so much by the market that they'd been copied, and our rivals had kind of made moves. They'd brought out products that were very similar to us. They'd offered, you know, the same kind of ethos, tried to be in the places that we were. And so actually those points of difference that we had started to be eroded. And so we needed to think again, you know, what does GiftGaff look like in the context of a new world, a world that we were all adjusting to at that time? And so actually, the answer really was staring us in the face. We looked back at those founding principles, but we reimagined them. And we thought about, what does that mean for a business that's going to be up to good? What are the things that we need to do to really drive that business forward? And I guess one of the things to really think about was, you know, what does that mean for our people? What does that mean for how we show up externally? And how does that whole package really come together? And so there were three key things, I think, that I really learned, and we as a business learned, as we went through this sort of transition and reimagining over the course of what was 3 years. And really, starting with our people was one of the key things. So how do we really get our GiftGaffers, as we call them, engaged and bought into this collective vision? Because they have such an important role in bringing that to life for us. How do we make sure that things are built in and not bolted on? How do we make sure that it feels like it's not the job of the marketing team or a corporate social responsibility lead, but actually we've all got an opportunity to bring whatever our specialism is into these conversations and make a difference within the business and indeed moving forward. So just three examples, and ignore the picture of me in the high-vis vest, because I will agree it's probably not the best one. But really, we think about sort of three things when we think about how we kind of really engage that with the culture. And, you know, we're really lucky, I think, in the business that we work in, that we give each of our GiftGaffers 5 paid volunteering days each year. And we help the GiftGaffers find those opportunities to volunteer if they're not able to kind of unlock those for themselves. So last month, as you will see, a group of us went out litter picking. Another group of us went out to the local allotments, tried to set up, you know, gardening schemes for the various local residents. And this is something we repeat 5 times each year. So it really becomes part of the regular rhythms of the business. Another thing that we do is we think about the governance of, you know, what it means to embed ESG within the business. And so we've got something which we call the Up to Good Board. I know that sounds a little bit grandiose. It isn't. It's a collective of 30 people. And please bear in mind that GIFGAF's about 250 employees in total. So a really well-represented group of people from across the business. We bring them together each month and we talk about our progress and we talk about what each of those business areas are doing and we share our challenges, we try and unblock problems for people and we really try and move that collective agenda forward. So getting those regular kind of moments in the diary where people come and connect is incredibly important. And then you're going to ask yourself, what are the pictures of the TPs? What's she going to talk about here? And this will be another word that I will struggle to say. But for the last 3 years, we have had GIF Gastonbury. Yes, you have heard me right. GIF Gastonbury. So we get the whole business together. We bus them to a site in a field. We erect a couple of teepees and we spend the whole day together really connecting and immersing ourselves in the business strategy, trying to understand the direction of travel where each of the teams has a role to play in that strategy. We bring in thought leadership. So the latest thinking in the ESG space, we try and help encourage all of our teams to have a real solid understanding of how the business is moving forward. And indeed, how all of these ESG initiatives are helping drive profitable growth for the business. It's a brilliant day. We get to connect. We get to build connections with areas of the business we might not see on a day-to-day basis. And it really helps it feel like it's part of our culture. The second learning that I have around being up to good is that you need to feel that, you know, you've got some solidity in that space. I think, you know, we touched on some of the kind of naysaying, we touched on, you know, greenwashing, the latest sports washing, etc. Actually, we wanted as GIFGAF to really think about how do we have credibility, for want of a better word, in this space? What is the underline that helps kind of move our strategy forwards and gives us a framework to really focus our attention? And so we decided to work towards a B Corp certification. It was 3 years in the making, and so I can't sit here and say it's quite an easy thing to do. It's actually the most challenging thing, I think, as a business that we actually did do. And it actually means that we've changed our legal articles of association. So whilst most businesses are set up to kind of satisfy shareholder need, we're actually set up to balance people, planet and profit equally, which means that in all of the business decisioning we're taking, we're really balancing off all of those elements to make sure we're making the best decision for everyone involved. So I'll just touch a little bit on what B Corp is for those who maybe don't know. So it's basically a certification. It's a whole series of, I think there's about 250 pieces of paperwork that you provide as part of the submission. And it looks at five, key pillars. So it looks around how you treat your workers, how you kind of show up in terms of consumers, how you kind of interacting with customers. Talks about your role within the kind of wider community and how you connect outside of your business. The governance structures that you have in place to make sure that you're able to sort of demonstrate that you have that robustness around the work that you're doing, and obviously the impact that you have on the environment. So it's a really balanced way of looking across the E, the S and the G and giving you a framework to work through. So it's a tough process, but definitely one that I took an incredible amount of learnings from and I think really helps sort of shape our business direction moving forward. The third big learning is that we're sort of stronger together. And I think, you know, you can spend a lot of time looking quite insularly. I think, you know, as Laurie said, you're often kind of in that zone, you're doing that day job, and it's quite hard to look up. But actually, by looking outwards to your broader network, there's that opportunity to kind of amplify and really create that ripple effect. So it's not just you as a business moving forward, there's the opportunity to kind of get greater momentum. Again, not the most flattering picture of me, I will. It's just all about me, isn't it? But I wanted to talk about three things here. So the first is around kind of partnerships where, you know, you can bring the products. So for us, it's connectivity. We found that as a result of COVID, really, the acceleration to a cashless society had really taken off. We were working with Big Issue quite loosely at the time. One of the challenges that they gave to us was actually, you know, our vendors are out of pocket because this cashless society is meaning that, you know, they're unable to take payments because no one's walking around with a tenner in their pocket anymore. They needed to be able to plug into the right technology to help them with that connectivity barrier. And that's where we stepped in. So we provided 250 phones. They were refurbished phones to enable those vendors to take cashless payment. Obviously, a real benefit for Big Issue and the vendors themselves, able to create that living that obviously they'd been fighting so hard to create. But from our perspective, it also allowed us to talk a little bit more broadly around refurbished phones and the role of refurbished phones within the overall ecosystem. So we know that if a consumer purchases a refurbished phone, it saves about 50 kilograms of carbon versus a new phone. We also know that we put an awful lot of work into looking at the guarantee around the phone. So the quality, the battery life, the fact that all the data will be wiped. We've put a lot of work into making sure consumers feel that those potential barriers to refurbished have been removed. And so it really helps us have that win-win conversation, helping a partnership, but also helping raise the profile of refurbished within the broader business. The second thing I want to talk about in this area is around kind of partnerships with media owners. So actually, we partner with MGOMD for all of our media buys. And as we established our partnership with them, we wanted to really think about our role. So this Architects of Desire piece that Laurie was referencing, our role around how we show up in media spaces. And so we've established some principles, which I'm really, really happy to share, around responsible reach. And this is all around thinking about how do we decarbonize at source the advertising that we're putting out into the market. So what are the choices we're making in terms of the partners that we select to go on our media plan? For example, in out of home, we might say that we want all of the sites to be turned off after 12 p.m. at night, because no one's shopping at 3 a.m. in the morning for a refurbished phone, probably. We might decide we want to diversify from some of the big digital players. So rather than everything going to Facebook and Google, we might bring some newer suppliers onto the plan who have made strides within this carbon reduction space. So really thinking about this and thinking about the way that we sign off our media, looking at, you know, reach, frequency, cost, but also carbon impact, has really brought this conversation to the table. And in doing so, we've removed 52 tons, which is roughly 14% of our annual media plan. We're not happy with that yet. We want to kind of move that forward, but it's a really good start for kind of the first year of that relationship. And then the third thing I want to talk about is launching the Up2Good Collective Fund. So whilst our absolute primary focus is to remove carbon at source, we recognise that there are, you know, situations where that is not possible. And so working with partners, with suppliers, we're looking to establish this fund, which we've already sort of started, which will enable us to really think about how do we take those contributions from media, how do we take those contributions from partners and actually make a real tangible difference and effort within those spaces. So far we've been able to support three projects, which allows us to kind of remove carbon, which is great. You know, there's a real sense of momentum around this program of work, and we're really looking to see how we can move that even further forward. So there's always more to do. And so I thought I might just share a little bit around where we are today in 2024 and what we're looking to do. So we have been really thinking about the impact that our sort of environmental and social practices have within our business. We have actually submitted our near-term and net zero emission reductions targets now to the SBTI, so Science Based Targets Initiative. So that gives us an absolute pathway to mapping to net zero. hard work really, really does start now. So mapping all of those opportunities and engaging the broader business and beyond the business, because of course it encompasses scope three as well. We want to understand how B Corp impacts our talent acquisition. So we hear quite often, anecdotally through interviews, that the sort of more sustainable aspects of our business are quite a massive draw. And that's brilliant for us because, as you can imagine, we're a small business and attracting really top talent is going to make a big, big difference. So we're going to add in a question to our employee engagement survey so that we can build robust data and really understand what that impact is. And then finally, we want to be more ambitious. And thank you to my media team in the audience going, now. But we want to be more ambitious around our responsible reach planning principles and really sort of step change that for 2024 and beyond. And actually, I think that's where channels like Out of Home can really help us make a bigger impact. So, Laurie, over to you.
Thanks, George. And to the Adweek team at the back who are stressing, I promise I'll keep this to 3 minutes. So if you see me skip through some slides quickly, that's what I'm doing because we're running slightly over. So Out of Home is commonly misperceived to be an unsustainable media channel. It's everywhere. It's ever present across the UK. And we've undergone a real digital transformation over the last decade. It's that case, I think, sometimes with digital out of sight, out of mind, but with Out of Home because we're in sight. We're in mind. But this is the reason why the opposite is true. Out of Home is a sustainable channel. And these metrics here, which if you want to see more of, you can email me after this session, showcase that when brands begin to leverage the assets of our medium effectively, it can have a really positive effect on brand KPIs. We know Out of Home primes other channels, but it also can prime sustainability messaging. And that's what this data shows too. And again, email me and I'll send you all of this because I'm going to skip through. I hope you've seen these reports already, but above what we can do at a campaign level, research from the last 12 months by the likes of PwC, Outsmart, and Legacy has demonstrated that Out of Home performs favorably across a variety of ESG metrics. Whilst there's understandably a focus on environmental credentials, Out of Home has fantastic credentials within social and community aspects too. For every £1 spent in Out of Home, 46p goes back into community, and not many other people can say that. But change starts with all of us. We can't shift the dial in Out of Home alone. GIFCAF can't shift the dial in telecommunications alone, although they're doing a good job, I have to admit. We must all start taking action. And I'd love everyone today to walk away thinking about what individual and collective changes you can make to ensure a more sustainable future. Whether it's taking the train instead of a plane to Cannes this year, whether it's renting your next dress for a big black tie do or a wedding, whether it's swapping your daily prep cup for an actual reusable cup, or if I'm thinking really big and you rep a big brand, what can you do in your next campaign that's going to drive sustainable change in the future? Small changes can make a really big difference, and we all have a very important role to play. Sustainable change will benefit us all as advertising professionals. If you spearhead it, it might even help you get a better job. But most importantly, it will benefit us all as human beings. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening to George and I. And most importantly, thank you for giving a shit about sustainability.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.